The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Sunny day here in Southern California, and a happy day because it's the day after the NBA draft. We have our draft expert from ESPN.com, Mr. Chad Ford. We went for so long, we had to split this up into two parts, but it's pretty chock full of stuff. I think it'll be worth it. You'll enjoy it over the weekend. Chad Ford, everybody. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Bill?
You're on the Subway Fresh Take hotline. I forgot to tell you that.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Congratulations. So you're flying back today? What's going on?
Last day in Bristol. Last show. Bill Simmons, this is the proper place to end this journey that takes all year. You know, I was getting a little nostalgic about this because you scout these guys for a year. You're trying to figure out who they are, and it's kind of like unwrapping the presents. You're excited, but, you know, now it's time to move on to 2011. I'm already trying to figure out who's the number one pick in 2011 now.
And now with Twitter, it's almost like you're in our house. You're right there. You're on the couch with us, commenting on every pick, then compiling it into a pick-by-pick analysis, which then eventually becomes draft day grades. You're just working constantly. Did you sleep last night?
No. I'm waiting to do that after we're off the podcast here.
God, you work so much harder than I do. I wish I could have 10% of your work ethic. I'd be unstoppable. All right. This is a two-part question. Part one, we can agree that was, in terms of talent, mediocre to below average, correct?
Yeah, it's probably. I put it right in the middle of the pack because I do think we're going to get a couple of, stars out of the draft, and that's important. I think Wall's almost a can't miss. And, you know, between Evan Turner, Derek Favors, and DeMarcus Cousins, for sure at least one of those guys is going to have an awesome NBA career. All four of them could, frankly. And after that, then I think you get a lot of guys. You know, I think there's going to be a few starters and then a lot of rotation players. I do think a lot of the people in this draft will make the league and stick, but I don't think there'll be guys that fans will be super excited about.
All right, so let's compare it to the last 12 drafts, and you had to grade it compared to talent and ceiling and depth would be the three components. Compared to all the other drafts, would you give it a C+, a C, or a C-?
Yeah, probably like a C, C+. Let's say C+.
Okay. So this is the second part of my question, because I read your draft day grades. I felt like you were too lenient with the grades because, as we just said, it's a pretty mediocre draft. So if it was mediocre, then wouldn't more people have made bad picks? Or do you just look at it like glass half full and not glass half empty?
Well, no, it's that grade on a curve, right?
Yeah.
I can only grade you based off of taking what was there. You know, if there's no good first round picks, and you have to select somebody, I can't kill you for selecting the best guy available. So I really try to judge this based off of who was there, who was on the board, who fit your team, who was a guy who was going to come in, who was a reach, and then grade it that way. And so, you know, some of these teams that had second-round picks got decent grades for me because where they were at and what they had and how they fit are good. And then other teams, got Fs.
Yeah. You're not worried because I saw that you liked, and I liked the Cousins pick too for Sacramento. I thought getting that guy at five was, I thought he was one of the best four players. So getting him at five is obviously a win. But then they followed that up with Whiteside, also a head case, also a lot of red flags there. Is it a good guy to draft two rookie head cases who might hang out?
Well, maybe they'll help each other. Maybe together they'll cancel each other out because they're different.
Yeah.
I think as far as value goes, at 33, Hassan Whiteside was the only guy in the second round who had the potential to be a monster, a superstar. Mm. And the Kings got him there. Now, and here's the thing I loved about the pick. If you drafted Hassan Whiteside almost anywhere in the first round, let's say in the top 20, even maybe 25 picks, he's still a risky pick.
Yeah.
And in the second round, he is not a risky pick anymore. He is all upside and reminds me a little bit of what the Clippers did with DeAndre Jordan a couple of years ago. They got him in the second round. He was a huge risk in the first round. In the second round, he's just kind of all upside, and anything he does for the Clippers is kind of a bonus.
Yeah, that's fair. I felt the same way about Detroit taking Ed Davis, number 13. I was not an Ed Davis fan in the top 10. But once you get into that 13 to 16 range, not a bad gamble. I still probably would have taken Patrick Patterson because I think, you know, I think he could have played right away for them. And he's more of a sure thing. He's a hard worker. I kind of know what I'm getting with him. Ed Davis might just be a stiff. We don't know. But at the same time, at 13... Toronto, not Detroit. At 13, with Chris Bosh possibly leaving, not a bad gamble at 13.
No, not a bad gamble. And I think it's interesting because Ed Davis, if you remember last year, people were talking about him as a possible top three pick. And we saw this with a little bit with Daniel Orton this year. This is the one thing that I don't like about NBA scouts and GMs when they talk out of both sides of their mouth on this, because they have a vested interest in getting as many of these young players in the draft as possible because it increases the overall talent pool. However, at the same time, I think they exaggerate what they think about certain players to get it out there in the press so that they entice them into the draft, and then they put them under kind of brutal scrutiny. And I think had Ed Davis actually declared for the draft last year, he could have been the Daniel Orton or Hassan Whiteside of this year's draft. And the guy's saying, he's not ready, he's immature. Well, you could have seen all of that on the court last year. I mean, with Hassan Whiteside, you definitely saw. With Daniel Orton, the guy averaged 3 points, 3 rebounds a game, yet everyone was in his ear, including the NBA guys, telling him, come to the draft, we love your talent, you're a potential lottery pick. And then all the things they say about you once you're there are things they already knew.
Yeah.
And so I do think that is one of the things that I don't love about it. They'll complain about the players being too young, too immature, they should stay in school, but they are number one responsible for luring these kids out in many, many cases.
You touched on this last night on Twitter. Your account is at Chad Ford Insider, right?
Right.
In case anybody's not following you. I thought this was interesting, and this seemed to be a recurring theme this particular summer versus the other summers, because we have so many people now covering the NBA and you know, tapped into different sources and things like that. And you got, you know, our ESPN guys, you get the Yahoo guys, you got the newspaper guys, you got Ken Berger at CBS. And it seems like there's just a lot of information out there, and it's very easy to pick one writer and kind of push some sort of agenda. You mentioned on Twitter last night that you thought Portland did that with Elliot Williams from Memphis. Explain.
There was a lot of whispering, hushed tones. We hear this kid may be injured more than possible. We don't know. We don't have any information. What do you know? Oh, my goodness. You know, maybe it's a catastrophic injury. You know, all of these different things. Then once I collect enough, that spreads like wildfire throughout the league, right? People write about it, whatever. And then, you know, all the GMs, what do you know? What have you heard? We can't find out anything. His agent won't return our calls. We don't know what's going on. Well, I finally got a hold of the agent, and he's explaining to me what's going on. And I had to twist some arms to get the agent to talk, right? And sometimes as a journalist, what you have to say is, listen, I have enough people who are talking about this that I'm ready to write this. I'm giving you the opportunity to clear up the record if you want to. And finally, in this case, he was represented by Arne Tellem's agency, and Thad Fouché talked to me on the record about it. But in the conversation, one of the things he said is he's worked out for Portland. Now, so if you're hearing from a team, we have no idea what's going on, we're completely lost, we can't get all the agent, I find out the guy's actually worked out there, there you go. Listen, there's a lot of lying that go. I think we know this. There's a lot of lying that goes on the week before the draft.
Shouldn't you do that, though? Like, I can't, if I was a GM, I would lie to everybody. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you put out as much false information as you could? Like, you look at what New Jersey did at number three. They try to make it seem like they were going to take Wes Johnson at number three for a couple of days. David Kahn had like a conniption. He was ready to have a heart attack over it. Like, that's a competitive advantage to do that. I think that's actually smart.
It is, except it's a fine line, right? Because they, doing what I do, where I talk to a lot of guys in the league, and you know, a lot of it's off the record, and you know, that's how you get good information.
Yeah.
There has to be a certain level of trust, and for both of us, if they're going to lie, it's a problem, right? Because I can't trust. I had several individuals, I'm not going to name them on the podcast, who just flat out said, "You got to trust me. I've never told, never lied to you before, Chad. I'm not trying to steer you astray." And then just flat out, bald face, you know, told me a lie. And you know, frankly, when they call and they need something, how do you trust them anymore? How do you know that you're not going to be abused? So, I mean, that's the other side of it. I mean, it's hard for me to say that. I understand if I was in their shoes, I might do it. And you know, it's interesting what the Nets did. I think we should talk about that for a second, because here's what we can sum up about all this. And I'm not sure I agree with this with the Nets. They decided at some point, maybe a week before the draft, that they didn't really like anybody at the number 3 pick. And so now it was about this. It's the 3rd pick goes from who are we going to get to? It's an asset, right? And how do we maximize the asset? So they tried a couple of strategies. I think the first strategy was interesting. David Kahn had kind of showed his hand in Minnesota. They were so talking up Wes Johnson and how much they liked him and what a great fit he was. And then Derek Favors comes into Minnesota, and David Kahn rips him in the press. He's out of shape. He can't play. We were super disappointed in his workout. And there's the Nets sitting there looking at this saying, okay, we're stupid. We're going to take Derek Favors. We're going to give him their guy. We're going to now tell everybody we're taking Wes Johnson and see what we can extract out of Minnesota. Now, it backfired because actually I think Minnesota liked Derek Favors maybe more than they were letting on, and the Nets figured that out after a couple of days. And then the night of the draft, it suddenly went to leaking that the Pacers were offering Danny Granger for the number 3 pick. See how valuable the number 3 pick is. They're willing to offer us their only all-star.
And that wasn't true.
According to the Pacers, it was flat out not true.
I mean, why would the Pacers do that? That's ridiculous. You're not going to trade Danny Granger for... Unless you just absolutely love DeMarcus Cousins and think the guy is going to be a 10-time All-Star, I don't see how you.
Yeah, and maybe they should, but probably not in Indiana. That's a team that couldn't draft DeMarcus Cousins because of the Ron Artest situation.
All right, so let's say I'm a GM. Let's say I get the job running the Clippers.
Okay.
And you and I have a relationship.
Yep.
And now, here's what I don't get with this whole source Chad Ford or source any reporter thing. What do you offer them that would make them say, I'm going to give you these tidbits because I know that down the road I will get X from you? Do they think that they're going to get like inside off the record information from you, or are they just trying to manage the media? Like, what is their goal there?
I think it's more information sharing.
Yeah.
For example, in the draft, it's really important for a lot of these teams to know what other teams are doing ahead of them. That's really important because they need to decide what they're going to do. For example, the Utah Jazz like the top 7 players in the draft, but they don't. And they think maybe one of those guys slipped, but they don't know. Suddenly, I'm just using this as a hypothetical. Suddenly, they need good information. Because they can't just call up the teams and say, who are you going to draft? I mean, they'll never get that right.
So they need intelligence. They need intel.
They need intel, and in response, they give intel. Now, if all the intel's BS,
right,
then, you know, it's problematic for everybody. And so I don't, but I'll tell you, Bill, I mean, it's funny. Sometimes I don't understand the agendas. I mean, sometimes I get phone calls, or man, in Chicago, I was pulled aside in the lobby by a general manager who, without me even asking the question, just gave me an amazing scoop. And I, you know, I thought about it for hours before I reported. What's the agenda? What are they trying to do? I can't quite understand it. I got it verified and ran with it. And you know, to this day, I don't know why they did it, other than they just decided to do it. So
because it seems like. It seems like the agents, I get it more from their vantage point.
Yeah.
Like they're feeding you info, And, you know, they're basically using people to get messages across, like, this guy's unhappy, or this team offered this, this guy wants out. And that's the one thing I've learned over the last 10 years is that the best agents really network with basically everybody who's covering basketball.
They do. I find, and this isn't necessarily a slam on all agents. You can't put them all in the same basket. Agents to generally be unreliable sources of information.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to the draft, because the truth is NBA teams are lying to them more than they're lying to anybody, because they know these guys talk. They know that if they say anything about it, they're going to go and run around. And I actually think it's the agents more than, and I can tell you there was a very high profile agent with a very good range of clients who was just flat out lied to by two teams about his clients. They told him they're drafting their guy. Of course, he gets on the phone. He calls me. I think he called other media members, you know, telling them, hey, I heard this from the horse's mouth. I'm telling you they're drafting him. I'm trying to give you information. I don't think that was BS. I actually think that's exactly what he was told, and I think they told him knowing that he's going to call. And so for the most part, agents are only helpful for two things for the draft. I'd like to know where guys worked out. I don't want to hear their analysis of the workout, because their guy always won the workout.
Right.
Right? So that doesn't help. But it is helpful to know who they were, where they worked out, and who they worked with. And then agents can also be helpful at the end about eliminating teams.
Yeah.
They are helpful in telling you, I know for a fact that these teams are not looking at my player. And then, you know, I've got a massive notebook where I'm scratching guys off, and they tend to be reliable there. Where their player is going to go, extremely unreliable.
Who are the franchises that have been able to really button up all the information that comes out from the actual franchise? Like, I think the Celtics have done a pretty nice job over at least the last 2 years of just not letting any information get out.
I tend to get the Celtics pick right. I got it right this year.
Oh, you disagree. But that was pretty – they were going to – I mean, you knew with Bledsoe or Avery Bradley were the two guys that made sense for them. They weren't going to get a big guy where they were picking.
It was more than made sense.
Look at you.
That's informed. But I'll tell you the two most notorious ones, and I'll be the first to admit that I have no clue on draft night about what they're actually going to do. One is San Antonio, which runs, I think, the tightest – shop in the league. I think they have everyone wired and tapped their phones because, you know, I know guys that I've had great relationships with, and they go to San Antonio, and if they even talk to me in a casual conversation, their voice is shaking when they're talking. And then the Thunder, who I think learned from the Sam Presti, learned from the Spurs. Now, I think they will selectively release a little bit of information here and there, but it's usually type of misdirection stuff. Those are the two teams that if you were to ask me, hey, Chad, go find out exactly who they're going to go draft, I haven't had a great track record figuring that out.
And you know what? That's how I would do it if I was a GM. I would be like, look, if anything gets out that we're discussing, I will find out who it is, and you're going to get fired. So let's just start out with that. Let's start out with that trust right there, is that if there's a screw-up, I'm going to hunt you down like Kaiser Soze. But I think a really good example of the thing that people don't realize is usually the person that spills the beans is some, you know, either a scout or some lower-level executive who is in on a meeting with 12 people who then tips it off. I think the best story I've heard about this is, you know, remember that last-second Houston-Phoenix Amar'e Stoudemire talks that happened? And somebody leaked it.
Right.
And Houston thought Phoenix leaked it, and Phoenix thought Houston leaked it. And the two GMs actually called each other, and both of them were like, you know, you guys have a leak. And they're like, no, you guys have a leak. And they're both 100% certain it was the other team that leaked it.
Right.
And I just think, like, you hear stories like that, and you think, wow, this is crazy. Like,
yeah.
These guys are in meetings talking about a gigantic, you know, top secret deal to move somebody that if it doesn't happen, you're screwed because that guy is now mad that you tried to trade him, and it somehow gets out anyway. Like, who did it? Like, that's the stuff I love with this behind the scenes stuff.
And in that case, I know who did it.
Really?
The leak was to me. But I can't talk about it.
Oh, That's right. I forgot. You did. You do know who the leak is.
I do know who the leak is on that. And you know, it is.
You're gonna write a great book someday.
If Bill, if I ever decided that I never want to report another thing in the NBA again, and if I could never step in an NBA arena without threat of bodily harm, I could write an amazing book. But it would be the end of my career doing what I do. And, you know, I'll tell you the most frustrating thing for me, because it's hard and it affects my reputation, is when a source, a high-up source, so in this case, let's say like a GM or an owner or something, tells me something, and then I report it, and then they go to their local media and say, who's this Chet Ford guy? I don't even know who this guy is. I don't know where this came from. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I live with that every year. That's the hardest thing for me at times, because I can't say anything. I can't write, you know, what are you talking about? You were the guy who leaked it to me. But
right. You almost feel like you're like a one-night stand that got used.
Yeah, yeah.
Why won't you talk to me? I thought we had something. I thought you were going to call.
It's a tough one. But, you know, and the thing is about predicting this stuff, it's tough. And, I mean, we're going to hear it now with LeBron. I mean, it sounds like we're almost in an inside journalism talk now instead of the draft. But
no, I think this is good. I think people are into this.
You know, it's going to happen with LeBron, because ESPN obviously has a ton of reporters. Obviously, there's local reporters in every city. There are other national reporters that are out there. And then there's bloggers by the thousands. And everyone is pursuing the singular story of the decade, which is, where is LeBron James going? And LeBron has a camp, and then he has another circle around that camp. And when you get on the phone and try to figure out what's going on, you can literally in a day hear five completely contradictory opinions, all swearing that they know what's going to happen. It will be the ultimate, I think, for the fans, confusing, misdirected, all over the place point where we're all trying to figure out where he goes, and you know, whoever scoops that story, that's going to be a huge story, because it's going to be very difficult to sift through all the BS to find out what's actually going to happen.
I know, I'm going to be so proud when I scoop it.
Is it going to be you?
Yeah, it's going to be me.
Okay,
I bet on me. I just have a gut feeling it's going to be my time to shine. Let's talk about this LeBron thing. And Lord knows we don't need to talk about this LeBron thing, but one interesting thing did happen yesterday, and it has nothing to do with LeBron. So Chicago cleared some cap space. They traded Kirk Heinrich along with the number 17 pick, and I think $3 million. Was that in there?
That's
too?
That's right. Maybe more, actually, but you can actually structure trades in a way where if you make it smaller, multiple transactions, you can have $3 million in each transaction. And I don't think we know. I don't think all the details have been worked out in that trade. I think that the principles have been agreed to in principle. They're still working out some of the details, but that is a possibility. I don't say it's going to happen. It's a possibility that the Bulls might send even a little more cash to make that palatable, because the Wizards took a lot of money back to get the 17th pick in the draft.
Right. Okay. So let's say they do two trades and they end up getting $6 million,
yep,
the number 17 pick in a 5-player draft. Congratulations. And then Kirk Heinrich, who is an overpaid third guard. Now, 4 months ago, the New York Knicks traded their Jordan Hill, their 2009 lottery pick, their 2012 number one, and gave Houston the rights to swap picks with them in 2011 to get rid of Jared Jeffries, who actually makes less money than Kirk Heinrich. Here's my question. Why didn't they wait until June to either see if they could do better than what they did, or just make the same trade? Because obviously Darryl was going to make that trade in June too.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I think the Knicks have gotten caught a little off guard.
I think Donnie Walsh has messed this up as badly as you can mess this up.
I don't think he thought that the Bulls, especially, could get under.
But you and I did a podcast with you at the end of January where we each tried to pick who we thought he was definitely going to if he was switching teams, and I said Chicago. This was out there since January.
Right. I think it has to do with the owners. I think Donnie Walsh looked and said, "Listen, my owner, he's crazy. He'll do anything. If If I had to go to him right now and say, I need $100 million in unmarked bills in a suitcase and I can land you LeBron, he'd have it in 12 hours. Mm. I think that's the power and the wealth of James Dolan. Reinsdorf has historically not been as free spending as those other owners. And I mean, you look at what they did. It was risky. I mean, I think
risky.
Yeah.
Here's what would really scare me if I'm a Knicks fan. And by the way, the last 2 years in its entirety would scare me. But I really think a key part of that deal for the Knicks, as crazy as it sounds, was getting Tracy McGrady. I really think that they thought that he was going to have a big 2 months and that he would be either somebody they keep or a sign and trade piece. And that was a factor in why they made the deal when they did. And you know what? If that's true, that Donnie Walsh should quit. Because that's embarrassing if he thought T-Mac was going to do anything.
I think they did as well. I think you're accurate in your assessment of that. I think that the Knicks have misplayed their hand. And it really goes back to the trade deadline, not this year.
A year ago.
But a year ago.
Sacramento.
When Sacramento comes and offers Kenny Thomas for Jared Jeffries. Now, I have no idea why Sacramento wanted to do that. I think they wanted Nate Robinson as part of the deal.
Yeah, it was Nate Robinson and Jeffries, who expires in 11, for Kenny Thomas, who expired in 2010.
Right.
And the Knicks were like, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
We can't trade Nate Robinson.
Right.
Really?
And even Jeffries, because Mike saw a little more time with him, we'll get more for him. And then, of course, they had to mortgage so much of their future, including Jordan Hill, to trade. I mean, the Knicks have made missteps. There's no question. They passed on Brandon Jennings.
Hold on, though. It wasn't just that they passed on Brandon Jennings. And I think if they had taken him at 8, I think everybody would have said it was a huge reach. My issue with their draft last year was that they were totally flabbergasted that Curry, Flynn, and Rubio were all off the board when they were picking at 8. It was like they hadn't mapped out any conceivable scenario where the top 7 was going to go the way it did.
Yeah.
We'll take Jordan Hill. Like, they had no idea what to do. I don't know. Yeah. What are you doing for 2 months if you don't know that that's a possible scenario?
Well, in the Knicks' defense, I've never seen 2 point guards drafted by the same team at 5 and 6. I mean,
that is a good defense.
I mean, when you're mapping out strategies,
yeah.
Do you really say, would anybody be dumb enough to draft 2 point guards here? And so as you're mapping it out, I don't think there's any scenario where Ricky Rubio, Johnny Flynn, Tyreke Evans, and Stephen Curry are all off the board.
Yeah, I think they thought they were getting Flynn. Because obviously if the T-Wolves are going to take Rubio,
right,
then the next pick by anybody who has logic is Stephen Curry.
And the Warriors were seriously looking at Jordan Hill too, and there was a possibility that Curry was going to be there, and you know, that was part of it. But I do think that, you know, in some ways maybe Knicks fans in part will be able to blame David Kahn for what might be a disaster. So, I mean, it couldn't have been a worse night if you're a Knicks fan.
No.
You have to sit there and watch the Jazz select with your 9th pick, right? And you desperately need young talent, and you still have the ghost of Isaiah Thomas in Madison Square Garden as the Jazz select the Knicks pick at number 9.
Right.
Then you find out that the Bulls have given away Kirk Heinrich and the 17th pick, and now they're looking at double max room. You're reading that the Miami Heat are a Michael Beasley trade away from having a triple max room. And then it gets to 38 and 39. Our hopes aren't high at 38 and 39. You can't expect general managers to find superstars at this point in the draft, especially in this draft where the talent level was starting to kind of seriously drop off anyway.
I would have said that at pick 16, but go ahead.
Yeah, 38 39. But, you know, creative staff who go out and look, and in my case with the Knicks, you have to swing for the fences with an upside guy here.
Yeah.
And they draft Andy Routens. who is a good shooter, and I can understand why Mike D'Antoni liked him. He was probably the best shooter and pure shooter in the draft, but strictly a role player who plays, you know, 10, 15 minutes a night, kind of coming off the bench. And here's a kid from New York, Lance Stephenson. And I understand Lance Stephenson has a bad rep, that in high school he got anointed the next LeBron. Some of that kind of went to his head. He got an entourage around him. He got a little cocky. He bought into some of the hype. Had sort of a bad attitude. I get all of that stuff. He got pretty humbled in the college recruiting process when people became so turned off about the thing that schools literally just quit recruiting him. And you know, at the end, he ended up in Cincinnati, and he had a somewhat of a humbling year in Cincinnati. Then he declares for the draft, and basically everybody tells him you're a second round pick. The kid works his butt off, gets into shape. I saw him down in Vegas. He has these amazing workouts. Every team that I'm talking to says, "Man, I can't believe how good this guy is." And still, nobody drafts him. He's sitting there at 38, and it's there's no risk to take a player.
Yeah, at least your fans get excited. And Dave, the other guy like that was DeJuan Butler. You could have taken those two guys, and at least your fans are like, you know what? Those are upside picks. I personally think Lance Stephenson is, I think on the shaky character scale, he's either 9.5 or a 10. I don't know if I'd have gone near him, but.
What do you have to lose?
You don't have anything to lose at pick 38 or wherever they were.
Right.
Wait a second. Let's go back to Utah for a second. Because. You know, I feel like I wish I had written in my column. I was thinking about it this morning and I kept thinking about it. And then you're talking about how maybe New Jersey wasn't crazy about number three and could have traded out of there for the right price. Utah was the one team that, with the people they already have in place, I mean, the players they already have in place, they really, you know, they could have cemented the decade here with the right kind of move. And instead they took Hayward, who I think is kind of, what is he? Is he going to be Mike Dunleavy? Can he even shoot as well as Mike Dunleavy? Like, I don't know. They could have moved up into that top three potentially. And if they, you know, there was the team that could have played the Cousins card.
In defense of the Jazz, they, for the last 48 hours, were desperately trying to do just that. They had all sorts of creative trade proposals. Cousins was the guy they were going for.
That's good to know.
And they saw the same opportunity, but I think that the Nets had a pretty high, almost ridiculously high price tag. And part of the thing with the Nets, for example, at three, which seemed to be the team most willing to do it, was they couldn't take any money back because that would hurt their free agency thing. So not only did you have to take the number three pick, but you had to take Yi Jianmian and you had to take Devin Harris. You had to take money back. In addition to get the pick so that it didn't affect their cap space. It was a difficult trade to kind of broker.
But wait a second, though. Didn't they have the Harpring trade cap figure because they traded him for nothing?
I had to look it up. I don't have that.
I think they did.
I don't have their trade exception off the
like
top
they
of
could have. They could have absorbed. They could have offered the 9 for the 3, offered $3 million, offered 2012 and 2014 number ones, and then offered to take E's contract.
Yeah, but their owner is not James Dolan or Paul Allen. I mean, the fact that the Jazz were in the luxury tax last year was a pretty amazing thing. That's not going to happen every year in a small market like Utah, especially now that Larry Miller is gone and his son and family are running the team. They just can't afford to do that. But, you know, Hayward, I think Hayward to me was one of the most intriguing names in this draft because it seems like generally, and you voiced it, everyone thinks this kid's going to be a bust. Of all places, you would think Utah is a place where, you know, Gordon Hayward would play well. In fact, Kevin O'Connor had the a line of the night to show that he may have been born in the 1800s. I love Kevin O'Connor, but I'm a tweaker. He may have been born in the 1800s when he said, "You're going to be the most popular thing since canned soup."
Right.
I love that line.
Well, I think he's going to go over big. My whole thing with the Jazz and just that draft in general is once we got to when did Greg Monroe went 7th? Yeah. I kind of liked him. I thought from 6 to 19, we have no idea who the best player is going to be. You could say declaratively right now, so-and-so is going to be the best guy out of 6 to 19, and there's just no way to know. It could be Avery Bradley, for God's sakes.
Yeah, it could be.
So,
Eric Bledsoe could be.
Could be any of those guys.
Greg Monroe. I agree. All of the Paul George. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I just think with Utah, they're pretty tapped out to where they are. They're a team that I don't think will ever beat L.A. and then down the road Oklahoma City in a series. I just don't think they have enough firepower. They're going to lose Boozer. They need that second star. And this was their one chance to do it. And you're telling me they tried to do it, but they didn't do it. And, you know, as you said, they're not a team that's ever going to spend the luxury tax. And I just think this is probably their window right here.
Yeah.
I don't see them ever getting to the finals with the team they have.
I think they're going to have to explore other alternatives. And, you know, it's not like the draft is the end of it.
The Kirilenko piece is the piece that if the Nets can't lure a couple of these big free agents, I do think that the mutant Russian Mark Cuban would absolutely roll the dice with him for his contract year and take him off Utah's hands and sell him back in Russia and do the whole thing. Don't you think that's a possibility?
I think that's possible. I also think that a Carlos Boozer sign and trade is a possibility. You know, Boozer and his camp are going to want the extra year and the extra raises if a team gets desperate enough to because all the other free agents are gone and they're sitting there with a ton of cap room. I mean, you can imagine scenarios where the Knicks don't get any of the top-tier guys,
yeah,
and maybe even the second-tier guys maybe go to Miami to play with Dwayne Wade, for example, and, you know, the Knicks are looking at Carlos Boozer and, you know, $34 million in cap room, and his agent Rob Pelinka is doing backflips down the street because he knows what's coming next.
And by the way, where's Carlos Boozer taking you? We just saw him in the Lakers series. He you know, they were just too big for him. I don't think ultimately he takes you to a title. If he's your best big man, your best big man is 6'8". We saw in the finals that, you know, titles are won at the rim and in the paint, and I don't think he can do that.
I would tend to agree with you. You know, I think the other team that was really disappointed, who tried so hard to get Cousins, was the Pistons. Cousins was a perfect
yeah,
fit for them.
And a good organization, I think, for him, too.
Yeah, and I think the kid wanted to play there. And
yeah,
it's one of these frustrations. See, they're two picks away. But right now, Joe Dumars doesn't have a ton of assets to be able to offer.
Well, I know you like him. I know you like him, but the Hamilton contract was an abomination.
I mean, that
single-handedly prevented them from being able to do anything last summer and this summer.
And, you know, I think it was interesting. I think the miscalculation came when they traded Chauncey Billups, not understanding the full ramifications of this. I really think the Pistons thought, maybe Allen Iverson would pan out. But even then, when I talked with them, I think they were pretty realistic that was a long shot. But that they're somehow we're going to be able to turn the free agency around, bring in a couple more veterans, and we're going to be right back in there. And that Rip Hamilton, so upset that they had traded Chauncey Billups, it was almost a goodwill gesture to say, listen, we're committed to winning, we're committed to spending, we're not rebuilding. We don't want to lose you, you know, mentally in this process now just because we traded Chauncey Billups, and not fully understanding that the market in 2009 was one of the worst free agent markets that was there. The Pistons had all the money, but no one to spend it on.
And they also, I think, wouldn't you say that they just rode the wrong horse? They basically picked Hamilton over Billups, and they gave Hamilton an extension.
Yeah.
And thought Stuckey was, I think, better than he is.
Yeah.
And I think they underestimated Billups' leadership. I did, too. I thought Billups was, you know, on a decline, and he wasn't.
I think they did. And I think there were signals to them that he was, and I think the trade, for whatever reason, really rejuvenated him. I think part of it was going back to Denver.
It's a little FU. A little FU mentality, I think, for him.
Yeah.
How dare you trade me? I just took you to 6 conference finals.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Rip Hamilton, the minute he got that contract, seemed to kind of fall off a cliff,
yeah,
as far as a player goes. You know, you can't predict all of those things. I think if you look on balance, Joe Dumars had a team that almost for a decade was competing for an NBA title without a superstar on their team.
And now those days are over.
And those days are over, but even for a good team, I think San Antonio is close to those days being over. Boston is minutes.
Hey, careful. Be careful, Chad.
Minutes away from those days being over. It's pretty hard to maintain over the course of two decades a consistent NBA contender.
I unveiled my Boston plan today. I was happy with it.
I want to hear that.
On Twitter. So Pierce out, re-sign him to 3 years, $51 million, starts at $17 million. Let Ray Allen go.
Did you get a commission on that, Bill?
I do.
Okay.
Let Ray Allen go because somebody's going to be dumb enough to give him like 4 years, $40 million. I could just feel it.
Okay, let him go.
Sign J.J. Redick with the mid-level. Gives you all of his outside shooting and not the same defense.
Is Adam Morrison coming next? I'm just curious.
You don't like J.J. Redick?
Well, I thought maybe you could pair your two favorite players in the draft.
Oh, I see where you're going. All right, I'll throw that in at the end here.
Okay.
Then Rashid, who thank the good Lord above us, retired.
That was a blessing from the basketball gods.
You know what I would compare it to? I'd compare it to the Miami, who was the agent, Bill Duffy, who screwed up with Anthony Carter's contract and enabled them to get Lamar Odom, who led to Shaq, who led to a title. It could be on that level.
It could be, especially if they trade Rasheed Wallace before he actually retires.
Well,
it's a big asset back.
And that's the thing, and that's what people didn't mention last night during our draft coverage, is that just because he's retiring doesn't mean you can't trade him. As long as he doesn't file the papers, suddenly, you know, he's on the books for 6.3 next year. But if you trade him, that can go up to 7.6 or something. So he becomes a $7.6 million trade exception, basically.
Expiring contract that you get off the books immediately.
Yeah, and there's teams that would absolutely dump salary, or they could pair him with another player and go up to like a $10 million guy.
Michael Beasley. Why not Michael Beasley?
Well, Troy Murphy, Andres B. Agents. I mean, I wouldn't take Okafor, but... Okafor.
Okay.
Andre Iguodala. Like, I mean, you know, it enables them to do some things that options they did not have. I like your Morrison idea. I'd like to sign him as a 12th man and have him with Luke Harangotti. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, wasn't the Luke Harangotti like, okay, Brian Scalabrine's done.
Yeah.
And we're bringing in our new version, 2.0, Scalabrine 2.0.
It's great. Oh, don't think Boston's not fired up for him either.
They're loving him. And you know what? He'll be in the league a long time. He looks like one of the most awkward players that you've ever seen. But when you are in the Big East and you put up 20-10 for three consecutive years,
yep,
you're probably going to be able to play, do something in the league.
Did Zubac didn't get drafted, right?
No.
See, I feel like he's going to be in the league for 8 years.
I really thought he was. Just because he's a rebounder. I mean, he doesn't do anything else, but he is a big body who can rebound, and his rebounding statistics actually are pretty impressive per minute. I thought he'd get drafted. I thought John Shire'd get drafted.
Yeah.
I'm not saying John Shire's going to be a superstar. He may not even make the league, but when you put up those type of numbers in the ACC consistently, and you can shoot the lights out and play two positions on the floor, and for the first time ever, and I'm not saying I'm perfect as far as the top 100 goes, but I talked to a lot of scouts. I talked to a lot of teams. We have a pretty comprehensive database of players, and there's only 60 players that go in the draft. So I have a 40-player cushion of people to get in there. For the first time ever, we had three players drafted in the second round, including pick 39 to the Knicks, that were not in the top 100.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
All right, that's it for part one of the BS Report with Chad Ford. Stay tuned for part two.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.